Chapter 10. Cage. The good news, Mr. Rucker, is that you're young. With time to heal and rehab, you'll be able to play football again, the doctor said in a soothing tone.
That's good, my father said, happier than I was.
The bad news is, the recovery time will be long. You are certainly out for the season.
This is his senior year. He wouldn't have any more time before a draft to prove himself. No. He has to come back before the end of the season. I don't care what you have to do.
Healing doesn't work like that, the doctor explained to my father. It takes time. He couldn't come back before the end of the season if he wanted to.
He can play. He'll just be in a little pain, right? My boy has played through pain before. He's tough.
The doctor looked at my father with sympathy. I understand your passion for your son's career, but if he were to play before he's ready, his return would be short, and he could do damage that wouldn't only threaten his long-term prospects, but could hamper his mobility for the rest of his life.
I don't care. Fix him. Get him on that field. Dad, you need to get to the draft. I've sacrificed too much to have you not make it now.
He's talking about me not being able to walk, I clarified.
I knew you should have entered the draft last year, he said, looking at me with hate. I told you, you didn't listen. Now look at you, crippled, useless, a big sack of nothing.
Mr. Rucker, I would like to remind you that your son should be able to play football again. He can make a full recovery.
And who's gonna care?
My father spit back. The doctor was getting a taste of what I had been dealing with my whole life. It was comforting to see the horror on the doctor's face. It told me I had been justified in hating my father in the moments that I did.
Don't worry, boy. You're a fast healer. You've always been. You'll play before the end of the season, trust me.
I'm not, I said before I realized what I was saying.
Yeah, you are.
I'm telling you that I'm not. I don't care if there's no pain. I don't care if I can dance for hours on it. I'm not playing again this year. I might never play again.
You will play again,
my father insisted. Have you ever asked me if I want to play football?
It doesn't matter because you're good at it.
It does matter, Dad. It matters what I think of it.
I saw you throwing those passes today. No quarterback leaves the pocket to run the ball for a touchdown if they don't love what they do.
Well, I guess you're wrong, because there's a part of me that's relieved that I'll never have to play again.
You'll play again. I'll guarantee it,
my father said with his eyes narrowing on me. No, Dad, I won't, I said, taking the first stand of my life. I'm done. You forced me to do it my whole life. But you heard the doctor. I'm done.
That man doesn't know who you are. I do.
You don't, Dad. You've never known. I'm not doing it again. It's over. After 22 years, I wasn't sure what had given me the courage to say that to him. Maybe it was meeting Quinn and realizing I could have a life outside of football. Before him, all of my friends and everyone I dated was there for Cage Rucker, the football star and NFL prospect. Quinn was the most thoughtful, wonderful guy I had ever met, and he couldn't care less about who I was. Besides, he was famous enough for the both of us. As painful as it was, maybe my injury was a blessing. It was my way out. The doctor was very clear. I was out for the rest of the season. Coach and my teammates would understand that. The media will think it's tragic, and they'll quickly forget about me. And I could have the freedom to do what I really want to do. I wasn't sure what that was yet. But what I was sure about was that it included Quinn. My father left my hospital room without another word. There was no question that he was leaving to get drunk. He would be back, though. I knew my father. He wouldn't give up on his cash cow just like that. I might have made my decision about it, but what I wanted never mattered to him. He wouldn't give up on getting what he wanted. I'm sorry about that, the doctor said sympathetically. Injuries happen, I told him, hiding the relief I felt that my football career might finally be over. I meant about your father.
Oh,
yeah, I said, finally numb to his constant heartbreak. Thanks. Do you have any other questions?
Yeah.
Has anyone else come to see me? Maybe there was a guy,
5'9", shaggy dark hair, cute as all get out. I can check. But your visitations haven't been restricted. So if he came, you would have seen him.
Okay, thanks, I said, disappointed. I understood, though. Yes, something was developing between us, but we weren't at the rush to the other's hospital bed level yet. There was no question that I wanted to see him. He was the only person I cared about coming. Everyone else was great, and I appreciated them for it. But staring into his beautiful eyes always made my day. Doing that now would make me feel like everything was going to be all right. When the game was over, there was an endless parade of teammates and coaches in and out of my room. They all looked at me like I was dying. It was obvious that I was out for the season. They could figure out what that did to my NFL prospects. I played along as if I was devastated. But each time someone knocked on my door, I had to hide my excitement that it would be Quinn and the two of us would begin our new life together. After I didn't hear from Quinn the first day, I was sure that I would the day after. I didn't. In fact, I didn't hear from a lot of people. I thought I would. I knew that part of the reason was that winter break had begun and the majority of the school had headed home. Dan couldn't afford to fly home for the winter break, so he visited a couple of times. So did Tasha, who grew up an hour away. My father never came back after that first day, and confusingly, Quinn never showed up. I tried not to feel heartbroken. He was a good guy. If he didn't come to visit, there had to be good reason. For the life of me, I couldn't figure out what it was. The best I could come up with was that he had booked a flight home for immediately after the game. If that was the case, he wouldn't have had the time. But why wouldn't he have at least texted? When I realized that he wasn't going to, I decided to text him. "Didn't I promise you a hell of a game?" I wrote. I stared at my phone, waiting for a response. A day passed, and nothing came. I was about to text something else when Tasha arrived to drive me home. I would have asked my father to do it, but he wasn't texting me back either. I didn't want to think about what that meant. He couldn't be that pissed at me, could he? He had to have heard what the doctor had said. If I tried to come back this season, it could cause permanent damage. If not for that, I probably would have played in the NFL for 10 years. Not because I wanted to, but because he wanted me to. I was a good son. That had to be enough. How could that not be enough for him?
"You ready?"
Tasha asked in a somber tone. It felt like something was up with her. "Yeah, thanks for doing this. I don't know what's up with my dad."
"Of course,"
she said, grabbing my bags as I maneuvered my way onto my crutches. The drive back to my place was a long, quiet one. I wasn't sure what I was supposed to say to her. My playing football was at the heart of the dream that held us together. She hadn't been in the room when I told my dad what I had. She did know that my season was over, though, and she was smart enough to guess it meant that my easy path to the NFL was gone. What did we have left together? I had to bring our relationship to an end. I couldn't do it now because she was in the middle of doing me a favor, but I was going to have to do it whether or not I heard from Quinn again. Pulling into my driveway, my father's truck wasn't there. I felt a burn in the pit of my stomach. I dismissed it by telling myself that he was at a bar getting drunk. I was about to get out of the car when Tasha stopped me.
"Can we talk?"
"Sure. What's up?"
"I feel like it's kind of shitty to do this now, but whatever. I think we should break up."
I didn't know if I was more relieved or rattled. Certainly our relationship was going to end, and her saying it meant that I didn't have to. But with everything in my life changing, and Quinn being MIA, I was hoping we could have waited at least a few more days to have this talk. "I agree," I told her.
"You agree?"
she asked, like she had said it as a test. "Of course. You were with me because you wanted to be a football wife. You didn't care about me. If you did, you didn't act like it."
"You think I didn't care about you?"
"If you had to choose between me and Vi, who would you choose?"
"Vi is my best friend."
"Exactly. I feel like I should have been your best friend. Or let me rephrase that. I feel like the person I spend the rest of my life with should be my best friend, and I should be theirs. You have your best friend, and it's not me.
So you're blaming me for this?
I'm not blaming anyone. There were probably things I could have done to be a better boyfriend.
Yes, there were. So many things.
That's fair. And I don't know how much of a difference doing those things would have made. I think you've just found someone you love more than me. And I've found someone I love more than you.
You're interested in someone else?
Yeah, I am. But so are you.
You think I want to date Vi?
I think you're in love with her. And I'm happy for you. I think you two might be really happy together.
Are you saying I'm a lesbian? Fuck you, Cage.
She said, refusing to entertain the idea. I shifted to get out, and then stopped. Look, I know how hard it is to escape the box that we put our lives in. When we're kids, we think about what we know and what we want, and we keep going after it even when we realize that it's not. But there's a liberation that comes when you don't allow everyone else's dreams define you, even when the other person won't text you back, I said solemnly.
Goodbye, Cage,
Tasha said, not giving me an inch. Goodbye, Tasha. Thank you for the ride, I said, throwing my bag across my shoulder and exiting on my crutches. Tasha didn't wait for me to reach the door to pull off. I didn't blame her. She probably wasn't ready to accept how she felt about her best friend, and I had forced her to look at it. If the situation was reversed, and she was saying that about Quinn, I would probably be pissed too. But there was no doubt that she was in love with Vi. I hadn't realized it until I said it, but it all made perfect sense. The girl was practically heartbroken when I said I didn't want to have a threesome with her. I didn't know if she was a lesbian or bisexual, but Tasha had unresolved feelings and she needed us to break up as much as I did. The only problem was that the person I was in love with might not feel the same way about me. It had been days since the game and Quinn was gone. Why? I didn't understand. What had changed? The only thing I could think of was that he was no longer my tutor. Could that be it? Was everything I thought that was happening between us just in my head? Was I just a stray puppy to him? And once he found me a home, he was done? I didn't want to think about that now. I had more pressing things to deal with, like how I was going to smooth things over with my father. He was clearly pissed. The man hadn't checked up on his only son as I lay in the hospital. I would have been upset if I hadn't come to accept it. The bar for him was so low that all he had to do was come home, and that would be enough. Balancing on my good foot, I retrieved my keys and let myself in. What I found surprised me. I was expecting to find the entire place a mess. It wasn't. It almost looked cleaner than the last time I saw it. That was weird because my father hadn't cleaned anything in years. Crossing through the kitchen to the living room, I realized that the place hadn't been cleaned. Things were missing. The liquor bottles that sat on the glass table next to the couch were gone. So was my father's coffee mug and favorite drinking glass. Dread filled me as I slowly realized what was going on. Dropping my bag, I quickly made my way to my father's bedroom. A long time ago, he had put a lock on the door. He was sure to lock it whenever he left. I didn't know what he kept in there, and I didn't want to know. But when I turned the knob this time, it opened. The room was a mess. There were papers and house decorations everywhere. What was he doing with all this stuff? And why would he keep house decorations in his room? Pushing past the crowd, I navigated to what I really wanted to see. It's empty, I said, staring into the closet. All of his clothes are gone. Quickly, I turned to his bed. Part of the reason he had put a lock on the door was that he realized I had found his hiding spot under it. It was a metal box under loose wooden planks. In it, he had more cash than an unemployed man should ever have. And sitting on the cash was a gun. Tossing my crutches aside, I fell to the ground and made my way past the junk under his bed. If his cash and gun were gone, so was he. My heart pounded as I inched closer. What was it? Had he done what he had threatened to do? Peeling back the planks, I found the metal box. There it was. I didn't want to open it, but I had to. I prayed to God that it was all still there. But opening the lid, it wasn't. The gun and cash were gone. The only thing left was an ID with my father's picture on it. He left me. He was really gone. I pulled myself from under his bed and retrieved my phone. My first thought was to call Quinn. I desperately wanted to talk to him. I needed to talk to him. "I'm not sure why I haven't heard back from you, but would love to talk," I texted, hoping beyond hope that I would get a text back. I didn't. Not that day or the next. I was alone in the world. I had no one and nothing. Heartbreak overwhelmed me, plunging me into darkness. Days earlier, I had everything and a guy I loved. I had lost it all, and now I was barely holding on to my sanity. I probably would have wallowed in despair forever if it wasn't for one thing: hunger. I had no money to buy anything, so the only thing I could eat was what was in the cupboards. That lasted me a week and a half before it ran out. Luckily, spring semester was about to start. I couldn't lose my scholarship in the middle of a school year, even with an injury. And with my scholarship came meal stipends. I would be fine as long as I attended classes and found a job. Both things meant that I would need to re-engage in life. I wasn't ready to do that. But what I was ready for didn't matter. This was about survival. "Dan, could you give me a ride? I need to get back to campus and pick up my truck," I said, calling him instead of sending a text.
"Of course, man. Anything you need, just let me know."
It was good to hear someone else's voice. I was going crazy living in the woods alone. I'd been hesitant to do it, but talking to Dan reminded me that I still had friends.
"Did you register for class yet?"
he asked me on the long ride to campus. "Not yet."
"You gotta get on that."
"I know." "Which reminds me, do you know of any campus jobs I could get? I'm a little short on cash."
"Of course. There's an opening where I work. I could get you a job there, no problem. And you don't even have to stand up to do it."
As hesitant as I was to call Dan, I left his car with a new lease on life. Transferring over to my truck, I reminded myself how lucky I was that I had broken my left leg instead of my right. Driving wouldn't be fun, but at least it was possible. From the stadium parking lot, I followed Dan to the Student Activity Center, where we met with his boss. There was an opening for a job behind the front desk, like Dan had said. Being a fan of football, the manager gave me the job on the spot.
"When would you like to start?"
he asked me. "Is tomorrow too soon?"
"No, that would be perfect."
"How quickly can I get paid? I'm going to need gas money to get here."
"I'll rush the first paycheck through. It'll be every 2 weeks after that."
"Thank you," I said, overwhelmed with relief. "You don't know how much this means to me." I was there the next day for training, and the job was even easier than Dan had said. All I had to do was watch as people slid their student IDs into the scanner and then compare the picture on my monitor to the person entering. It was a mind-numbing job, but I didn't know where I would be without it. With not everyone back from break yet, barely anyone came in. Once the semester started, it was a different story. School began for me too. I had signed up for more education classes. It was too late for me to switch my major from athletics to education, but taking the requirements would open up a few more doors. Entering the classrooms for the first time, I always looked around for Quinn. He had taken a class on childhood education. He might have taken another. If he did, it wasn't any that I had signed up for. And with a campus of 30,000 students, the odds were very slim that I would ever see him. Did he even want to see me again? I had to guess that he didn't. If he did, he would have replied to any of the now numerous texts that I had sent him. It was hard for me to believe that it had ended like that. Quinn was the one person I thought wouldn't care that I couldn't play football. Yet, he had vanished the same moment everyone else had. Doing everything I could to push him out of my mind, I focused on class. But every time I did, I would remember that Quinn had helped me overhaul the way I took notes and studied. I would remember how into it he was and how it would make me laugh. I would then spiral off into a million other things about him that I missed. The only thing that would snap me out of it would be hunger or the beep of the scanner at work. Lost in a spiral of thoughts about Quinn, it was a beep that brought me out of it this time. Remembering where I was, I looked at the monitor doing my job.
The image that came up was for someone named Luis Armory. It made me think of Quinn's friend Lou. Not bothering to look, a second name quickly appeared. Quentin Toro. My heart stopped. My face immediately got hot and my eyes flicked up. It was him. I couldn't breathe. He and Lou were 10 feet in front of me and neither of them was looking my way. I froze, not knowing what to do. He hadn't died or dropped out of school. There he was. Even if he had lost his phone, he could have found a way to contact me. I had been injured. It was his job as a friend to reach out. Do I speak to him now? As they passed, Lou seemed his usual energetic self. As he spoke, his arms bounced around wildly. Quinn, on the other hand, looked like he had the weight of the world on his shoulders. He looked achingly sad. My chest clenched, feeling his pain. Why was my Quinn so sad? Quinn, I said, unable to stop myself. Both guys turned and stared at me. Quinn had a look of shock that melted into elation. It quickly dissolved into distress and then finally panic. He backed away as if he had seen a ghost and then ran. What was going on with him?
Stay away from him,
Lou told me, as if I'd ruined his life. I was in shock. What was I supposed to say to that? Wait, I don't understand. What did I do?
Just stay away,
Lou said before retreating down the hallway and into the facility. I sat frozen and dumbfounded. What could I have done that would elicit that reaction from Quinn? Was he traumatized by watching me break my leg? That was ridiculous, but it was the only thing I could think of. With everything that had happened between us, I knew I couldn't let things end with him running away from me like that. I at least needed an explanation. If I had done something, I needed to know what it was. Leaving the desk unattended, I grabbed my crutches and rushed after them. The hallway spilled out into the multi-purpose room. There was a juice bar on the right, an area with weights in the middle, and a rock climbing wall on the left. I couldn't be away from my desk for long, so I chose a direction and took a shot. Heading to the rock climbing wall, my gaze bounced onto everyone in the area. I thought I had chosen wrong until I saw my guy sitting on the mat with his face in his hands and Lou comforting him. I needed to know what was making Quinn so upset. I needed to save him from it. Quinn! Quinn looked up in panic, about to flee. Please, don't go. I can't move that fast, and I can't stay that long. But I need to know. What did I do? Why do you hate me so much? I thought we had a good thing going. But then I got hurt and you disappeared. Now you're running from me like you're scared for your life? None of it makes sense. You used to be the one thing in my life that made sense. Help me understand what changed. You owe me that much. Please. Both Quinn and Lou stared at me as if I had three heads. Why wasn't anyone saying anything?
It's your father,
Quinn spat. I jolted, shocked. Of all the things he could have said, that was the last thing I would have guessed. What about my father? Quinn didn't reply.
He threatened to gut Quinn like a pig if he contacted you again. He said he would kill Quinn, then he would kill me, and then he would go after Quinn's family.
The words hit me like a punch in the face. I had to force myself to speak. He, what? When?
At the hospital,
Quinn said, gathering himself and standing up.
You came to the hospital? I didn't think you did. Of course I came,
Lou added.
We waited in the waiting room for 2 hours to see you.
So what happened? I said, looking between the two.
Your father pulled me into a room, stuck what I think was a hunting knife against my stomach, and said that he knew what I was.
I can't believe this, I said with my mind swirling.
You can't tell him we spoke to you. He said that if he found out, he would kill us,
Quinn explained. My father is gone. Quinn stared at me, confused.
What do you mean, gone?
I mean, when I came home from the hospital, all of his stuff was missing. He had been threatening to leave me for years. He finally did it. I don't think he's coming back. I don't think you have to worry about him anymore. Cage, a voice called from behind me. I turned. It was my boss.
You can't leave the desk unattended.
I'm sorry. I'll be right there. I turned back to Quinn. I don't know what to say about what happened to you, to both of you.
All I can tell you is that I'm sorry. I never meant to put you in a spot like that. If you don't want to ever speak to me again, I get it. But I wish you would. Maybe we could just get together and talk.
Cage!
Coming. Please, Quinn. Please. I said, not wanting to leave his soft, vulnerable eyes, but knowing I had to.